welcome. I have to compliment the people from Oklahoma. The hospitality's been really good, so thank you for the welcome we've had here. So. My name is Jack Beatty. I was on the USS Liberty along with Bryce there, and I was in the Navy part, and Bryce was the Marine. I'm going to just tell you somewhat about the ship and what I did, and then we'll finish it up with the Marines here. They can tell you their part of the communication part. I went in the Navy. I was 18 years old. My first ship was the USS Liberty. The USS Liberty was a freighter that was in mothballs. It was did serve sometime during World War II, 1945. It was in mothballs to the Korean War, and then they took it up, put it back, and then they took it out in, I don't know, 64, 65, and they converted it to a AGTR, which is a technical research ship, which was a spy ship, and it was the latest and greatest at its time. When I went active duty, I got orders to the Liberty, and I showed up on the ship, and I have to say the first thing, I walked up the gangplank in Norfolk, Virginia. I was 18 years old, and the petty officer of the watch looked at me, and he says, you must be a polywog. And I had no idea what a polywog is, and for you people out there that maybe don't know, if you're in the Navy and you cross the equator, you will become a showback. If you have not crossed the equator, you are a polywog. And a polywog is the lowest form of life there is. And hence, from that day on, I was on the ship, you were harassed until you crossed the equator. That was probably the funniest thing on the Liberty. But hence, say, I got on the ship. They put me in engineering department, B division, which was down in the hole, in the boiler room. And the deployment schedule of the Liberty, we were homeported out of Norfolk, Virginia, was 4 months over to Africa, the west coast of Africa. We patrolled up and down the west coast of Africa. And then back to Norfolk, 2 months in Norfolk for training leave and whatever, and then 4 months back over to Africa. And that was the rotation schedule. They made many trips like that. I made one trip. I crossed the equator. I went through the initiation. I am a shellback, and I got that in my record. I got a little ID card. And the captain knows all about it.
I was a polywog.
Right. The Marine didn't go across the equator, so we won't go there. But anyways, on the second deployment for myself, we went over to Africa, and we ended up receiving some orders. The mission of the Liberty, from what I could tell, I was an engineering young kid. The communists were in Africa at the time, and so were the Cubans were over there at the time when they had more of an influence in the world. And we were monitoring the messages and what talk was going on shore. And we got orders to proceed to Rota, Spain. The Six-Day War started. That was the Six-Day War between Israel and Egypt and Syria, Lebanon, all those countries. So we flank speed up the Rota, Spain. We stopped at Rota, Spain, picked up some people. Come on in. And we picked up some people and supplies, and we proceeded to the eastern part of the Mediterranean. That was our operating. We were 13 miles off the coast of Israel. You could see 12 miles to the horizon, and we were just a little bit farther than that. We were patrolling back and forth, doing our job. And on the 8th of June, we had a practice general quarters drill, which is like battle stations for everybody. It was a practice. And we just secured from that. I went back down to the machine shop, and we received some of what they call them maintenance on the motor whaleboat. The motor whaleboat is a boat that hangs over the side. It's and they use it for a man overboard. They put the boat in, they would pick somebody up. So we, me and Mike Shaley, an engineman, went up there to do some work on the boat. Clear day, the flag was up, no clouds, the sea was calm, perfect day. We noticed after a while that the lookouts on the bridge, the binoculars were looking up towards the sun, and people were pointing, and the next thing we knew, the bridge blew up. It took a rocket or a cannon, I'm not sure what. But prior to this here, we had flyovers from the Israeli Air Force. I seen it personally twice. I was out on the deck, and the planes went around us, we actually waved to the pilots of one of the planes. But after the first rockets and cannon hit the bridge, they sounded the fire or general quarters, which is battle stations. Everybody ran to where they're supposed to go. Mike Shaley and me, we jumped out of that motor whale boat. I ran aft, he ran forward, and that boat took a rocket about 5 seconds after we got out of it. I got pictures. There's just the two davits hanging there. And I went inside the superstructure and then down. My station was emergency fire pump room, which was right down the bottom of the ship. I had to go down a tube about 30-some feet down. And it's about 12 by 12, and I had an electric motor and a pump in there, a fire pump. If for some reason we lost fire hydrant pressure, this pump would be a backup pump. I put the phones on. You could hear a rocket and cannon hit the side of the ship. And being a young kid, I had no idea what was going on. Somebody shooting at us. And right away on the phone, they told me to start the pump up and get some pressure. There's some valving you have to turn. So we turned that on. Yes?
I got a question for you. Okay. Yeah. When you're going down, what, that's three or four decks?
Levels, yeah.
Was that three or four?
Oh, I don't know. The tube was long. I can't say. But three or four.
But when you're having to go down that many, you're also having to close those hatches behind you.
Right, the scuttle. The hatch was closed.
So you lift that out. You're basically digging your own grave as you're going down.
You're correct. That's right. The hatch is closed. The scuttle's open. The scuttle is a little round one. You shimmy through there. You close it and you spin it tight, and that compartment's watertight.
And then you go down a little farther into the ship.
You go right down the belly of the beast. Yeah, right. Yeah,
no air conditioning, really, to speak.
Nothing. It's you're by yourself down.
And the missiles are slamming into the side of the ship and exploding. And
it was scary. Yeah, it was.
And you're trying to go down farther.
Yeah, and if you're claustrophobia, it would be probably pretty nervous.
Just an observation.
Well, you're correct. You're familiar with what I'm talking about. And then so I got down there, and I was on the phones, and we got the pump running. And I was pacing back and forth and thinking, wow, what's going on? And on the circuit, you could hear all the people calling in for medics and firefighters and lots of action on the phone circuit. So after about 40 minutes, the pounding of the attack stopped. It seemed like there was a lull. And after a while, they said, stand by for a torpedo attack. Starboard side. So I'm thinking, starboard side torpedo attack. This wall bulkhead, that was the starboard side of the ship. The ocean was on the other side. I'm realizing I'm down below the water line. So I got on the phone. I said, request permission to get out of here, And of course, in the Navy, they said, wait one. That means hold on. We'll let you know, So meanwhile, I'm going up the ladder, and I got to the top of the ladder, and I was just crawling through there. And they said, get out of there right away. And as I did, the torpedo entered the ship, and it blew up and killed 25 people. It was in the communications department where the torpedo entered the ship. Hence, the ship was like this, and it started rolling. The bulkheads where I was at collapsed, and there was smoke, and it flipped me around like a rag doll. So right away, we started running up to where our abandoned ship was. They passed the word, prepare to abandon ship. As we went up one flight, it was going to go outside on the main deck. The machine gun bullets, they were literally just pounding us there was four boats out there, and torpedo boats. We couldn't even go out on the deck. We closed the hatch, and there were slugs coming through the bulkhead. So we basically hunkered down for, it was several hours, and the attack quit, Bryce will tell you why the attack quit here in a minute. We had 174 casualties. We had 34 dead. There was 9 outside and 25 below decks. The galley was full of wounded. On every table was somebody that was wounded. We had them on the deck. We had two corpsmen on the ship. We did have a doctor. Unusual for a ship to have a doctor that size, but we did. So we were fortunate.
How big was the mess?
It was pretty big. I'd say
the galley or the place where you eat.
Big as this? Maybe bigger?
Yeah, a little larger.
A little larger than this here, and there's tables bolted down.
Enough tables to feed most of the crew.
Yeah.
In one sitting.
Every in the book there, you show a picture of it. Every table had a casualty on it, everybody. It was like a slaughterhouse, really. The only protection we had was 450 calibers. Those guys were killed outside. You can't knock a jet down with a single barrel 50, so.
So the boat, the little boat they got in, was that targeted?
Well, I don't know. They were pretty good. We jumped out of it and ran, and it was gone.
And then when it hit the communications section, was that a targeted hit, or is that just...
They were using heat-seeking missiles, and those heat-seeking missiles immediately destroyed all of our transmitting antennas.
Yeah. The ship, the excuse was it was a mistake of identity. The ship is well-marked. It's a gray ship. On the bow, on the front of the ship, on left and right, on the back and the both sides, 5 foot letters, GTR-5. Four different places, and on the back of the ship, the stern is Liberty in 1 foot letters. The flag was up. I was outside. I heard the flag. I know the flag was up. You can hear it snapping. You ever hear a flag snap in the wind? That's what it was doing. They said we were unmarked, and they didn't know we were there, so... it was a long night. We were on fire. We were sinking. They sent some planes to our assistance. The planes were called back. There would be no assistance for the Liberty. So we were out there all night on our own. Bryce will tell you more about that. We steamed. It was about 4 days. The next morning, the USS Davis came alongside a destroyer, and it literally pulled up to the side of the ship eventually, and about 20 guys come off. We had a big boat, a wall that was bowed out, and if that would have broke, the ship probably would have sunk for sure. And they came aboard and they shored it up so that it would not pop apart. And they brought some food on board, some more medics. We needed lots of medics. And finally, the fleet came, the carriers came, and they helicoptered the dead and the wounded off the ship. We steamed at about 4 knots. We got the boilers up to Malta, which was about 4 days away, and we went in the dry dock. And in that compartment, there was 25 dead. The CTs volunteered to go in there and recover the dead. I think we lost six bodies we never found, and the rest they had to go through there. That compartment was full of black oil. Seawater, it was really a mess. The ship stunk so bad. If you have rotting bodies for 4 or 5 days underwater, you couldn't eat on the ship. We were sleeping on the ship. We had to use the toilet facilities off the ship. And we were there at least 5 weeks, I'm thinking. They patched it up and sent us back to Norfolk. Eventually the ship was scrapped. The keel was bent on it. But while we were going back to Malta at 4 knots, Admiral Kidd came on board. He was on one of the ships from the fleet. And I was laying in my rack. It was early in the morning, probably around 6. I look up and I see this belt buckle with 3 stars on it, and it was an admiral. And we came to attention on deck. Sure, have a seat. And it's not that often as an E3 you see an admiral on board. So we jumped up, and he was talking to us. He was drinking a cup of coffee. And he told us, after this little conversation, that we were to keep our mouth shut, or else we'll end up in Leavenworth Prison. And as a 19-year-old kid, that was it. So I never said nothing for about 15 years, and I don't think anybody else did.
And you...
But, yes, Captain?
Now you saw the surveillance planes flying overhead
right
beforehand.
Twice. 2 days, yeah.
And then the officer of the deck, and the guy that's driving the ship,
mm-hmm.
In the morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning,
right.
They were reporting that they were seeing these planes flying over them,
right.
Observing them. They could tell they were Americans.
Right, and yeah.
There's something else, too, that I just thought of from the last trip, In the Middle East, you don't see anybody but Americans sunbathing. You know what I'm saying? Everybody in the Middle East, every picture you see of terrorists or odd, they've always got their face covered. Well, they do that in Asia and all over. They don't want to get their skin darker than it is.
Right.
It's also a protection. But not the Americans. You got this clean Navy ship. They're all over the decks.
Sun worshippers.
Sunbathing, you know.
Right.
Who does that? You know, yeah. But Americans.
Yeah, it was. You're right. Yeah. They don't sunbathe. Yeah. Yes, sir.
So I have a question, sir. If the Israelis, and I presume that was the attacking party, if they knew that you were Americans, even though they trumped up an excuse, what would be the real reason for the attack?
I'll cover that.
Bryce is going to go. There's three reasons. We're pretty sure we know the answer to that. But I have to say one other thing now. We have a new website we just put up last year. We have a couple of them. Liberty Veterans Association, which is all the survivors, and then the Liberty Alliance, which is a group of people, I don't know how to describe them well.
Admirals,
and there's another. We're tied in with them, and we're trying to get an investigation, a congressional investigation. There's never been one on the Liberty, never. But we have this website, it's USSLibertyDocumentCenter.org. And in that, we have freedom of information we've been pursuing for years. Just last year, we got these documents released from the CIA, and there it is, black and white, and a memo from the CIA dated November 68. Mojan Dayan was the one that authorized the attack. At a meeting, there were some people there, the CIA, however they do it. There was an admiral and a general that was outspoken, no, we will not attack him. And he overrode him, and he said, we will. We have the document, end of conversation, smoking gun, our allies attacked us intentionally.
The Israeli admiral said, why, this is murder.
That's right. And that document was just released. It's been 40-some years. Yes, sir.
What was the name of the admiral who you met?
Those were redacted. The admiral and the general, and also whoever our person was in at that meeting. The president of our association is a retired CIA, Bernie Galla. He wrote one of the books there. And he said, those are things you'll probably never know, but apparently the CIA had a source in that meeting. You'll never know who it was.
Did your captain survive?
Yes, he did. He received the Medal of Honor.
And did he have direct communications with the Secretary of Defense or President Johnson?
No, that was the commander of Comm 6 Fleet.
Right. Bryce will explain that part of the... Bryce was in the communication part. I wasn't, so he's got a good insight to what that was. But I just have to recite, the ship should have sank, really, but it didn't. From the U.S. Yes, Liberty, there was one Medal of Honor, two Navy Crosses, 12 Silver Stars, 20 Bronze Stars, 204 Purple Hearts, 9 Navy Commendations, a total of 834 medals. There was a Presidential Unicitation and 291 combat ribbons. It was the most decorated ship for one incident ever. So.
And you couldn't talk about it.
And I'm here to talk about it, yes. So.
The Medal of Honor was presented in a shipyard.
15
That's
years.
Right. The captain received the Medal of Honor in the Washington shipyard. Anyone that receives the Medal of Honor goes to the White House, always. And usually the crews are invited people that you would know. Our captain received it in the Washington Navy Yard. I think the Secretary of the Navy presented it to him. It was low-key. I didn't even know about it. And the captain never talked about the incident for years and years. And then one reunion, he shows up and he mentioned that it should be investigated.
Well, who was the president then? Was it Johnson?
Johnson was president. And McNamara was Secretary of Defense. Yes,
and the official story was what?
It was a mistaken identity.
Thinking it was...
It's hard to believe. I mean, Israeli
violence. Thinking it was an Egyptian ship or something?
Yes, they thought it
was. I'll cover that.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah, he's got that. Yep, it's a horse trader, an old horse trader. Yes, sir. Something's wrong.
Talk about something serious for a minute, your age. Getting old has its perks, but remember, being a few years younger, you know, your hair was thicker, you didn't have so many wrinkles, that extra weight wasn't haunting you, and you just felt better. Well, we can't turn back the clocks and go back 10 or 15 years, but you can start feeling and looking 10 or 15 years younger with Nature's Youth RSF. It's a doctor-formulated daily supplement that helps your body maintain its peak performance and fight the aging process. Imagine sleeping better, looking better, and feeling better. See how Nature's Youth RSF has helped thousands of people just like you at naturesyouth.com. Naturesyouth.com. The holidays are coming. Imagine how it will feel when your family and friends are asking you what you did to look so good. Your secret will be Nature's Youth RSF. It's time to start looking better and feeling better. Learn more and order your Nature's Youth RSF at naturesyouth.com. That's naturesyouth.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Please don't talk about me when I'm gone. Oh, honey, though our friendship ceases from now on.
Have you or anybody from the crew ever heard or been contacted by any of the Israeli pilots or crews on the gunboats or anybody like that?
No, but in one of the books here, I don't know if we have any left, but there's another book written by one of the officers was on the ship. His son is a journalist, publisher, wrote a book. And at the end of the book, in the last paragraph, they go to Israel, and his dad goes with them. John Scott was my boss on the ship coming. He was the damage control system. They went over there. His son found one of the pilots from one of the planes, knocks on the door. He invites them in. They go outside to his guard. You'll read about it in the book. And he's asking them about the Liberty. He was an older man. He wouldn't talk about the Liberty. He says, I can't do anything. He mentioned, my dad's in the taxi cab. He couldn't believe it. He says, bring your dad into the house. John Scott comes into the house. You read that part of the book, Bryce, in the back.
We had several of those books, and there was a rich politician there at our noon meeting, and he wrote us a big old check, and he bought almost all of our books.
Right. Anyways, John Scott comes into the house and meets one of the pilots that wounded him. And this guy shook his hand, and he said, I'm sorry. And that was basically the end of the book. But that's the only part that I know that anyone ever met up with the pilot. One of the pilots refused the mission, went back to the base, and he was court-martialed. I believe he got 5 years.
5 years.
An Israeli pilot. So they knew they were going to attack American ships.
Do we have his name?
We do have, but I can't just call it off the top of my head.
It's a true story. It's easy to say because that's what I've seen. Yes, sir.
When your captain was awarded that medal, was that in Patuxent Naval Yard?
In the Navy Yard in Washington, which is on the river. I have not been to the Navy Yard, but near Anacostia, I believe, somewhere in that area. Wherever the Navy Yard is at in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to let Bryce fill in the blanks here. Thank you. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Let me cover just briefly the African crews up and down the west coast of Africa. We were targeted. I didn't join the ship until she was in Rota, Spain, which is actually on the Mediterranean. But the ship was targeted against Cuban and... better get that. It might be the phone.
Yes. Probably.
The early 60s, there was a big independence movement on in the subcontinent of Africa. And a lot of countries that have been ruled by Portugal and France and Spain and Belgium and you name it were winning their independence. Well, these countries are rich in natural resources, gold. And the Soviets wanted part of that. And the Soviets and the Cubans were introducing troops in there. And the job of the USS Liberty was to keep track of them. They received orders. They were in Abidjan on Port Call of Liberty. And late at night, there came a call to post haste sail for Port of Rota, Spain, take on stores and additional troops, and sail at flank speed for the Middle Eastern war theater. War was imminent between Israel and the United Arab Republic. The United Arab Republic consisted of the countries of Jordan, Syria, Libya, and Egypt. Egypt was the big military power. Both Egypt and Syria were supplied militarily by the Soviet Union. They were sending advisors. shortly before the attack, we had arrived on station off the Sinai Peninsula in the eastern Mediterranean on, I believe, the 7th of June. The war was already ongoing. It had started on the 5th. The operations officer got all of the supervisors together, gave us our instructions. I was a voice intercept watch section supervisor. I had a flag linguist, an advisor that worked underneath me. There were three sailors, two Marines, and a civilian advisor. The civilian advisor and the two Marines were all Arabic linguists, and the three sailors that worked for me were primarily Portuguese, French, and Spanish linguists. That's understandable since she's cruising up and down the coast of Africa, and those are primary languages of the countries that were running the operations in these countries. We were told that if we picked up an Israeli target, we were to identify it and drop it. We were not targeted against Israel. Our primary mission, I had children too. Mine's over there. She grew up.
To hold the hands I know on this winter night with you. The smoke is rising in the shadows overhead.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation. And Angioprim is the result, a safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
Yeah, our primary mission, there was a squadron of Soviet Tu-95s, or long-range bombers, whose primary mission was spying on the U.S. 6th Fleet. The Soviets had told the world that they were manned by Egyptian crews and they had nothing to do with it. That was not exactly accurate. Of course, the Soviets had never told a lie. Our government never does either, by the way. They were actually manned by Soviet troops. All the ground troops that surrounded the planes and guarded the planes were manned by Soviet troops. They were wearing Egyptian uniforms. All conversations were conducted in Arabic. When they would go on a mission to overfly our U.S. 6th Fleet, they would take off. All the language for taxiing and which runway and the flight to take and so forth was all done in plain language Arabic. They would get over the Mediterranean. They would switch frequencies and go to plain language Russian. And it was my job as a Russian linguist, and two of the other supervisors were Russian linguists. Our job was to nail down the Soviets and find out their frequencies and record their conversations. We had searched diligently, and we didn't find much of anything except Egyptian troops that were getting their butts kicked. We found a lot of Israeli targets that were identified and dropped. I did see one message cross my desk, which had originated a few days earlier, and it was rolling orders for Israeli tanks to invade Egypt. I did not originate that message, but I saw a copy of it, and that was originated on the first day of the 6 days war. When the Liberty docked at Rota, Spain, they were taking on stores. When I got down to the docks, there were two other Marines there and three civilians. They were all Arabic linguists, and I was Russian. I couldn't understand why I was there. I didn't find out until many years later. But I had a specific specialty of processing messages and knowing how and where they originated and realizing where they were going. And they wanted a Russian linguist that had that capability. And that just happened to be me, so I received orders to the ship. And I just happened to be in Rota, Spain at the time. My home base was in Bremerhaven, Germany, and I was ordered on temporary duty to Rota, Spain. We were working with VQ-2, which is an airborne intelligence collection unit. We were flying A-3s. This is a twin-engine medium-range bomber that was reconfigured for electronic spying and collection. And we were flying a Navy version of the... Any of you remember the old TWA Constellation from the 40s and 50s? That was a workhorse back then of Trans World Airlines. That was originally a military transport plane. And the Navy had several that had been reconfigured with radar domes and collection antennas and bristling with electronic gear. And VQ-2 had one of those, and that was a mission that I was flying on, actually out of Keflavik, Iceland, overflying Soviet Northern Sea Fleet summer exercises. The ships were all home-ported, I believe, Murmansk. It's off the Yala Peninsula in northern Russia, bitterly cold up there, and it's iced in like 6 or 7 months out of the year, and nothing can sail. So when summer comes around, they got to get everything out of dock and try and patch up all the holes and get them to work in a little bit. Those nasty engines kick them a couple of times to get them to working and get out to sea, and that was our job, was to overfly them and collect communications. We left Rota, Spain, and arrived on station, I think, on the 7th of June. I had the mid-watch the night of the 7th of June, got off watch at 6 o'clock in the morning. I had been traveling in civilian clothes, like, you know, a U.S. GI traveling in Europe in civilian clothes, you can't figure out if he's U.S. GI. But anyway, those are my orders. I had a Samsonite suitcase, and I had 3 utility uniforms for wearing aboard ship, but I only had 1 dress uniform. And down there on the docks, joined the ship. Got off watch on the morning of the 8th of June, and I needed some plain underclothes, some new underclothes. I didn't have hardly any with me. So I went to the small stores aboard the ship, and I bought some new T-shirts. Hey, wake up over there. I was at my bunk stapping my name in my T-shirts when the first shell struck the ship. I'd never been under fire before, but there's a very distinctive sound of exploding metal against steel. And sound at sea resonates highly, especially where steel's involved. The whole ship would ring. And excuse me, there were 821 large caliber shell strikes. That was 40 millimeter or larger. 40 millimeters a shell about that size around. It was about that long, explosive charge at the end of it. The other strikes were guided missiles. They immediately knocked out all of our transmitting antennas with heat-seeking missiles. That cannot be done by accident. They had to have specific armaments and specific ammunition to do the job that they were doing. That can't be done by accident. I immediately dropped what I was doing and ran from my GQ station, which happened to be in the center part of the ship below decks, below the waterline. We had a lot of classified information on board ship. We had these large canvas ditching bags with brass furls in them, a lead weight in the bottom. You had to stuff those things full of that classified information. And the idea was to get them up topside while you're at sea and pitch them overboard. And with that lead weight in the bottom, they would sink, and by the time somebody managed to get down there and recover them, anything that was in there would be unreadable. Well, folks, it's a Marine's job to get shot at. And the division officer stuck his head in the door, and he said, "Sergeant Lockwood, did you come here a minute, please?" And I stepped out into the passageway, and he just got me in a conversation with the operations officer about getting a working party together to get those ditching bags topside and pitch them over the side. And there was a blinding flash and an awful ringing in my ears, and I was knocked to the deck. And I was kind of semi-conscious. And the only thing I could think of was, Lord, I guess this is it. I guess it's over, at least. I guess I'm coming home. At least Lois and the kids are taken care of. I felt something cold, and I looked down, and there was water gushing in. And while I was in the 80s, upper 80s, outside, the ambient water temperature was in the low 70s in the Mediterranean, and it felt cold. And I thought, oh my God, we're in trouble. I heard a moan behind me, and there was a sailor back there. I didn't find out until 25 years later. His name was Joe Lentini. Joe had taken a piece of shrapnel on his left thigh. It had gone completely through at least two sheets of steel that was the skin of the ship, and then struck him on the thigh and was bleeding profusely. He sat down on the deck and leaned up against the ladderway. This is a very narrow stairway. They call it ladderway aboard ship because it's not only narrow, the steps are very narrow and steep. And he was trying to put a tourniquet on that left leg. His knee was propped up like this. We had a sheet steel temporary bulkhead which separated our office spaces from the passageway. Yeah, a bulkhead is like a wall, but it was thin sheet steel. But when there's a heavy explosion behind it, that struck him in that left leg and just made toothpicks out of it. And I reached over, the water was coming up to, I guess it was up to his belly by then, and I got my arms under his armpits and was trying to pull him out, but he was wedged in tight. And I said, I can't do it by myself, you got to help me. And I'm trying to pull him, and he's moaning, and his head's rolling around, and by that time he's choking water. And I didn't know his left leg was smashed. I said, come on, help me. You got to get your legs under you and push. I'm yelling at him. He said, come on, push, push. And I saw him stumbling around, and he got his right leg underneath him, and he pushed just enough to where I could pull him free. But his left leg was still tangled up in that sheet metal wreckage. And by that time, the water was up within about a foot and a half of the overhead ceiling. We had a lot of electrical cables that were in conduit, steel pipes that ran across there. And I got a hold of one of those steel pipes, and I saw this unconscious sailor that was rolling around in the water, and he was heading out the torpedo hole. I reached down and got an arm around him and held him up out of the water, and I said to Joe, I said, are you going to be all right? And his head's kind of rolling around. He had a hold of these pipes, and he said, yeah, I'm okay. And I still didn't know his leg was still tangled up. And all the sailors were on that ladderway screaming and hollering. And with all the confusion, you'd have to understand that. I mean, I was a dumb Marine. This thing's going to Davy Jones's locker, folks. And I just screamed. I said, y'all knock it off. If y'all don't settle down, none of us will get out of here alive. I remember hearing a division officer, Mr. Bennett, pounding on the hatch up there. And he said, this Mr. Bennett, open this hatch. And apparently I passed out because the next thing I remember, I was down there alone. We didn't have any electricity. The only light that we had was coming through the torpedo hole, underwater, and everything was dark, and there was seawater and oil everywhere. And I didn't find out till later. They said that I took one man out and dropped him on the deck. I was told I should not go back down. It was entirely too dangerous. Chief Smith, that was a senior enlisted man aboard, said he looked me right in the eye and said, Sarge, you can't go back down there. And he said, I just gave him a blank look. I don't remember any of that. But he said, I just gave him a blank look and went back down. Anyway, when I finally got him out, we were told that we had to go to the radio room over on the port side or the left side of the ship that was opposite where the torpedo had struck. And should the ship go down, that would be the last part that was above water and we could get off up there. But we didn't have any way to get off. Jack has some pictures of the ship here. There's a picture right here. He mentioned the word davits. Davits are like pulleys on board ship. They're called davits. There's two of these structures here. This was a rack of life rafts. And there was a lanyard on the side of that rack. And in case of an emergency at sea, you could jerk on that ripcord and a small explosive charge would go off. And those life rafts would automatically inflate and shoot out to sea, except the Israelis dropped napalm on all that stuff. We had no way of getting off. I was lying in the deck of the radio room, and they were talking about jamming of our distress frequencies. Well, I was familiar with jamming, but I didn't know that was going on. But they had destroyed all of our transmitting antennas, but we had one whip antenna. That's like what you used to have on your car years ago. But it had not worked the entire cruise, and it had a bolt hole in it. One of our radiomen got a big reel of coaxial cable and ran it from the transmitter through the radio room down the side of the deck to the back part of the ship where that whip antenna was, while the Israelis were riddling us with machine gun fire, hooked it up to that whip antenna. He came back with his arms all bloodied from shrapnel, and he says, "Well, I think I got it up." And that's when we got our mayday off. "Firefox, Firefox, this is Rockstar, Rockstar. Under attack by unidentified surface and naval air units. Require immediate assistance." And as soon as that mayday was acknowledged, the shooting stopped. I remember seeing sailors with three blow-up old rubber life rafts walk through the radio room and threw them over the side. I didn't see them throw them over the side, but I could hear what was going on. I heard a revving of diesel engines and more rattling of machine guns. And one of them came back in and he said, "I don't know what we're going to do now." What had happened is the Israelis had deflated two of those rubber life rafts, severed the line, that's the rope that holds it to the ship so it doesn't float away, came in and picked it up and carried it off. The ship that torpedoed us, the wheel from that ship is in the Israeli Naval Museum at Haifa, Israel. And that rubber life raft, labeled United States Navy, is in that same museum.
As a trophy.
As a trophy.
Trophy?
Yes. The Israelis that were attacking us were treated as Israel's heroes.
But they're our allies.
They're our best friend.
Yeah, sure.
Well, could you expand on that? When you say they were seen as heroes, and as, are you saying it's literally presented as a trophy?
Yes.
It's in a glass case. We're
proud of it, Charles. It's a spoil of victory.
I understand that. I'm just trying to see. I'm trying to picture my own mind. If we could, can we go over there today and see that they're bragging about it?
Yes.
Bragging about it?
Yes.
What's the name of the museum?
Wow. I don't know the name of it, but it's in Haifa, Israel, and it's not that big a city.
Then how can they say it was a mistake?
Yeah, I'll cover that. I'm getting heated up. Excuse me.
Brian Williams covered that.
Because that's what
I would hold my breath on that one.
Katie Curry.
The mistake was that it didn't go off as they planned, probably.
Yeah, they fired five torpedoes at us and four of them missed. With the three torpedo boats, if any of you watched, what's that John Wayne movie?
In Harm's Way.
In Harm's Way. Thank you, sir. That's it. In Harm's Way. He's a torpedo boat captain in World War II. It shows the machine guns raking off your targets, and it shows the torpedoes being fired. They're torture. Typically, there's two torpedo tubes, one on each side, three of them, so that would be six torpedoes that were ready for firing. We think that one of them malfunctioned. Thankfully, the Israeli Navy wasn't nearly as competent as the Israeli Air Force was. They missed with four. One of our guys, Jack had mentioned earlier, a fellow named Rick Imedi. Rick was up in the front part of the ship, I think below decks, and he heard this funny sound. And he wondered, what was that? That, folks, was a near miss. I heard some helicopters, and I'm lying there on the deck wondering, what is going on? And I didn't see the helicopters, but I was told by our sailors aboard the ship, the Israelis say they sent helicopters over to see if there were survivors in the water and to pick up survivors. Excuse me. There were armed troops on those two helicopters. They had belts of machine gun ammunition hanging off them. Hand grenades hanging off them. Now, what's that for? Shooting sharks? There weren't any sharks over there, by the way. Isn't that right, Jack? Sharks were off Africa.
Yep, Africa.
Apparently, they were called off because the mayday had just gotten out just prior to that. Apparently, they were called off because we heard them depart, and then I heard another helicopter. And I didn't know The U.S. Naval Attaché was on that third helicopter.
U.S.
Navy? He was a Navy commander. He was stationed at Tel Aviv, Israel. His name was...
I would be happy just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you. The smoke is rising in the shadows overhead.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down, and, you know, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you worry a lot? If you're forgetful, nervous, moody, or overwhelmed, chances are you're not protecting yourself from the ravaging effects of stress and anxiety. No matter the cause, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, your quality of life, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in as little as 1 to 2 weeks and increase your ability to recall facts, names, and numbers in 4 to 12 weeks. Calm and Clever was created by scientist Kurt Hendricks, a principal investigator in 2 NIH-funded studies on Alzheimer's disease. Try Calm and Clever for 2 months. You'll feel the difference. Call 1-800-758-8746 or go to calmandclever.com.
Gone. His picture of his card in back one of those books over there. He dropped his calling card in a brown paper lunch bag, weighted down with an orange, onto the deck. And it landed next to the severed leg of a wounded sailor. The captain sent a runner down there to pick up the bag. And on the back of the card, it says, "Have you any casualties?" Excuse me, folks, there's blood everywhere. The excuses. The Israelis said they didn't see a flag. It was a calm day, and the flag was hanging straight down. That's not true. We were steaming at 5 knots, and there was a 5 to 8 knot breeze. As Jack said, the flag was snapping in a breeze. They said he couldn't see the flag from the smoke. There wasn't any smoke until they dropped napalm all over us. It was their own napalm. They said they were being shelled by a warship from the sea at El Arish, Egypt. This was a town that they had just taken from the Egyptians. The Israelis had captured an entire Egyptian brigade, over 850 men. on the morning of June 8th at El Arish. They forced them to dig their own graves and brutally slaughtered them all. Most of them had their hands wired behind their backs.
Did they excavate that already? Did they dig those bodies up?
I have no idea. It makes me wonder when, what was the gentleman's name that was president of Egypt that time? He was assassinated some years later.
Gamal Abdel Nasser.
The one after him.
Anwar Sadat.
When Sadat negotiated the turnover of the Sinai Peninsula back to Egypt, I cannot understand why he didn't scream about that to all the news media in the world. And we didn't find out about it until 1986, when two Israeli journalists told the U.S. news media about it, and there's a little tiny article on the inside of our newspaper about like that with it.
It's government.
Who controls it? They say they were being shelled from a ship at sea. The so-called shelling from the ship at sea was actually their own troops blowing up captured Egyptian ammunition. They say, we thought you were an Egyptian warship called the El Kassir. Excuse me, the El Kassir was one-third the size of the USS Liberty. She was a World War I horse carrier. Her only armament was a 4-inch muzzle-loading cannon. How far do you think that would shoot? It certainly ain't going to fire 13.5 nautical miles.
You probably don't need a heat-seeking missile to destroy it.
Sir?
You probably don't need a heat-seeking missile to destroy that boat either.
The El Kassir had not gone to sea for 20 years and was waiting to be cut up for scrap. And if you knew anything about the Israeli Mossad, surely they must have known that. The difference in the markings. Egyptian ships are painted black with Arabic script markings. U.S. ships are painted battleship gray with plain language English letters and numerals. The numbers on the side of the ship, GTR-5, that stands for General Technical Research, which means she's a non-combatant. You do not fire at a non-combatant ship. The 5 stood for the 5th ship of her class. Every ship at sea that's a warship is required to have a copy of James All the World's Fighting Ships on the bridge.
Right.
Had they had one, and they should have had one, it would have been very simple to look up in the index, alphabetical number, GTR-5, go to the page number, there's a picture of the ship, what her complement is, what her engines were, what her tonnage was, everything about it is there in plain old black and white. Surely they must have known. Oh, by the way, yeah, the El Kassir is in there too. And it states it had not gone to sea for 20 years and was waiting to be cut up for scrap.
If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh or two, I would be happy just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
If you are one of the millions of people who get migraines, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist who created MigRelief, the patented dietary supplement that addresses nutritional deficiencies in adults and children with migraines. Thousands of physicians and pharmacists recommend MigRelief.
Call 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Sin, the sin see, the word of God. Sin, the sin see, and wear me well.